Good morning, good afternoon. Welcome everybody, thanks for joining us today. Quick introduction, we're here to deliver an online IT camp about Windows Azure Infrastructure Services. So hopefully you're all in the right place. My name is Dan Stoltz. I'm an IT pro evangelist, technology evangelist for Microsoft. I've been with Microsoft for a little over 5 years. You can reach me via email at dstoltz@microsoft.com. Although the best way to reach me is probably via Twitter, and my handle is IT pro guru. Also, my blog, you'll definitely want to make a note of that, because throughout this presentation, I will refer many times to different articles that I have that will tie very well into the content that we're delivering today, and that is itproguru.com. I also have Brian Lewis with me today as a co-presenter. So Brian, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. As Dan mentioned, my name is Brian Lewis. I'm an IT pro evangelist, just like Dan, with Microsoft. And my Twitter handle is @BrianLewis_. There were way too many Brian Lewis's to be the first one to get there, unfortunately. But you can reach me on Twitter that way. From an email perspective, it's blewis@microsoft.com. And my blog, which I hope you'll visit, is mythoughtsonit.com. And we're looking forward to having you with us today for the Azure event. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian. Let me start with just letting everybody know we do have a hashtag for the IT camp, for the Azure IT camp, and it's #AzureITCamp. So if you have a Twitter account, log in, and we'd like to keep a conversation going on Twitter. By all means, please also introduce yourself via Twitter to both Brian and I. I actually want to start us off with a couple of questions. So as we get as we get into the IT camp, we're gonna start off with an introduction to Windows Azure. But before I do that, I really want to kind of get a feel for you guys. So let me first throw up a poll question, because one of the requirements for Windows Azure is that you have a live ID. So I'm hoping that everybody has done their homework and has a live ID. Do we have a poll question on the live ID? If so, we can put that up. I also have another poll question on Azure Projects. So I kind of get a feel for you guys on what Azure Projects you might have in the queue. The things that a lot of times whenever I talk to customers, I find that there's a lot of projects that have kind of been on the back burner sometimes for weeks, sometimes months, sometimes years. Things that they'd really like to do, but just, don't have the hardware, don't have the time, don't have the resources, don't have something, don't have the technology, the capability to be able to deliver. And Windows Azure really gives us an enormous opportunity to close the gap on a lot of those things. In particular, some of the things that we can do with Windows Azure are projects that I've had people with on a back burner, have on a back burner, is, it's backing up the production environment. Azure storage, as we get into later, and we'll talk about pricing, is incredibly inexpensive. So being able to back up production environments via the cloud, moving even cold storage that's used, so live storage that's used, some cold storage or storage that's not used very often, moving that into Windows Azure is also a big play. But probably the biggest play that like everybody kind of jumps on the bandwagon very, very quickly is this disaster recovery, because leveraging technologies like Windows Azure Cloud Computing for disaster recovery, disaster planning is very, very, very inexpensive, because you're not actually running these processes all the time. So you're only getting charged for the storage. And as I mentioned, storage is incredibly inexpensive. So from a disaster recovery standpoint, pretty much anybody that's doing disaster recovery jumps on it pretty quick. And even those that would like to do it but have just found it to be cost prohibitive for them to be able to do that. So that's another big key. And then obviously there's the web hosting, your websites, being able to scale your websites, to not have disaster deployments like they had with the healthcare website, etc. Being able to scale very, very quickly if you do have large demand, and just simply having infrastructure. If you need to go out and buy a server, don't. You can just put it up on Azure, and it's incredibly inexpensive, and very, very fast, and very, very scalable. But But even beyond the websites, also server hosting. Now we offer the capability of doing things like RDP, so you can remote desktop right into Windows Azure servers, not only as administrator but also as user. So some really incredible things there. So let me get some polls going here, and you guys tell me kind of what you have in mind. Julian, can you throw that poll up?
And just a note, you should be seeing the poll up now, so you can go right ahead, Dan. We should be having people voting. I'm seeing people voting right now.
Okay, so the numbers are streaming in. Do you have a project on a back burner? Most of you are saying yes, you do. In fact, we're looking at about 60% right now that do versus 40% that don't. I'm guessing that after this presentation, some of those 40%ers are probably going to say, "Oh, wow, I didn't know I could do that," and think about some of those things that are kind of on a back burner. So with that, for those that do have some projects on a burner that you're considering Azure for, we'd like to get some feedback from you and maybe share in the comments or on Twitter. Either way, let us know and make sure you use the hashtag so we can find you, either on Twitter or in the comments, and give us some of your ideas on what you plan on using Azure for. Now, one of the other questions that I wanted to find out is, you know, do you have Windows Azure? And if you do, what kind of Azure account is it? Is it through MSDN? Is it through BizSpark? Is it a free trial? Is it a pay-as-you-go? How are you accessing Windows Azure? And in many cases, you might have multiple. I understand that. You know, whichever one you are using now or using the most, you can let us know that one. Awesome. I see everybody. The numbers are streaming in. Offsite AD and using ADFS for cloud. Okay, excellent. There are most of you have an account already. I see there's some BizSpark. If you guys are not familiar with BizSpark, I strongly encourage you to take a look at it. You can go to my blog and just search on BizSpark to find out about that program. It actually gives you 3 years of free MSDN and free Azure. So again, my blog, itproguru.com. Definitely want to check out that program if you're not aware of it. So I guess the next thing that we want to do is we want to kind of jump into to Windows Azure let's take a look around at what Windows Azure can provide for us. Now, in this part of the presentation, we're actually going to go into talk about infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, and kind of look at how they're different. What do those mean? We're not going to spend very much time on any of this stuff. This is more kind of a quick overview for those that may not have any exposure to Azure so far. And then we're going to look at self-provisioning, global scale, just how big is this thing called Azure? Obviously, cost is a big concern for people whenever they're looking at deploying Azure. So we're going to look at estimating cost and figuring out what it's going to be for you. Some more examples of how people are using Azure and what are the caseloads, what are the workloads that work best in cloud environments. So we'll take a look at that from a pattern standpoint as well as a scenario standpoint. We have lots more coming after that. We do get very hands-on throughout the course of this, and I'm really looking forward to you guys getting started with your Windows Azure. So the first thing that I want to do is I want to just kind of look at the entirety of the platform. And, you know, Microsoft is a breadth company. They're a company that really wants to provide you a complete solution. They're not, you know, a niche. They're not in the market of just doing one thing. They want to be a full service shop for you. And as you look at what they're able to bring, you'll see that they're the only company that can really go across all platforms, whether it be the Windows client, the desktop, the, you know, the remote, the laptop, the phone, Windows embedded, Xbox, with, you know, giving you identity and access management, bring your own device, collaboration, development. And this is done with a number of different components and products built in to the platform: Active Directory, System Center, Windows Intune, Office 365, Visual Studio for those that are doing development in-house or that are developers. Lots of good stuff there. What we're going to be focusing on here is the kind of the Windows Azure side of things as we go through the course of the morning, the afternoon. So first, what are these, you know, silly looking acronyms, IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS? Well, they're the different cloud computing models. IaaS simply stands for infrastructure as a service. And think of that infrastructure service as a host, a server in the sky, a server in the cloud. And it's for hosting existing applications, in any applications. And this is an oversimplification, but you'll see a little bit more about this as we go through the course of the presentations today. And then platform as a service is more of a development for developers or for developing applications. So these are new custom applications that you or your organization creates for leveraging cloud services. And then software as a service is really consuming cloud services. So it's packaged applications such as Office 365, Windows Intune, etc. There's tons of them out there where you're utilizing the cloud service, and it's just a service being provided to you by, you know, online services. Now, in the traditional computing model, on-premise, you provision and manage everything from the storage, the networking, the compute, the virtual machine, operating system, runtime, applications, data, access, the whole thing. You manage everything. Now, you manage everything also means you control everything. As we move into cloud services, some of that is abstracted. And because it's abstracted, you no longer have to manage that. In infrastructure as a service, the things that are abstracted are the storage, the networking, and the compute. They're managed by a vendor. So basically, that burden is taken away from you and is presented to your cloud provider. And that's all done by Microsoft. That is what Windows Azure provides. You provision the cloud services, but everything that happens under the covers is done for you. So you have a web interface to go in and you know, spin up these different services or different models that you need in different scenarios, whatever your scenarios might be. And you provision and your provider provisions the physical storage. You tell them what you want to have provisioned, and they give it to you. You provision and manage everything above that. So the virtual machine is an example. And of course, everything that you provision and manage also means, you know, management, part of management is patching. So in the case of infrastructure as a service, you have a virtual machine in the sky, you own the operating system, you own the machine, you don't own any of the hardware. So all the hardware is managed for you. You don't have to worry about hardware outages. That's all controlled. That's all managed for you. When we look at platform as a service, what we're really doing is your vendor, Microsoft, is providing more services, they're making more services available to you. So as an example, they're supplying you with the virtual machines, they're supplying you with the operating systems and the run times, which means you don't have to worry about patching any of that stuff. See, in infrastructure as a service, you have to patch the operating system because you own it, you control it, you manage it. In platform as a service, one more layer of abstraction is given to you so that you just simply run your applications, you install your applications, you patch your applications, and all of the infrastructure that your applications run on is managed for you. And then when we get to But the part that you manage is simply applications in the data and access. Software as a service, it takes it one layer further up the stack of what is being provided for you. So even the applications are not applications that you've written, but applications that are being provided, like Office 365. So you just manage the data and the access. So you decide who is able to log into that particular service, as an example. That's software as a service. All right, so what we're going to focus on today, pretty much the rest of the day, is going to we're going to drill down into infrastructure as a service, so that infrastructure service, IaaS. What I do want to point out, though, before I move on to that, is from an infrastructure as a service standpoint and a platform as a service, they really are better together. They're not two isolated silos that happen to be part of an Azure infrastructure. They're brother and sister, or brother and brother, sister and sister. They're two pieces of the same family that offer different capabilities for different scenarios. And most companies, whenever they are leveraging Azure services, they do use them together, specifically the infrastructure as a service and the platform as a service. Because as you'll see later when we talk about authentication and running applications and your own applications and stuff, we're not going to be able to scratch the surface on the capabilities that you have with platform as a service and infrastructure as a service working together. There's just a ton of stuff that you can do when you and increase in your capabilities whenever you're able to leverage those different components together. So one of the things that we're going to be doing today, or the key thing that we're going to be doing today, is we're going to be doing self-service provisioning of a virtual machine. And Brian's going to get to that in just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. But before we go there, I kind of want to give you a quick overview of the Windows Azure infrastructure. So let me start with, if you don't already have a Windows Azure account, I would encourage you to write this URL down, the aka.ms/az-easy. That gives you step-by-step instructions on how to provision your Azure account. I know there's about 35 to 40% of you guys haven't set up your free account yet. So for step-by-step instructions, go to aka.ms/az-easy to do that. And I'm going to just switch over and give you my desktop for a moment. And bear with me just for a second.
Dan, just to chime in here for a little note, while Dan's starting sharing out his desktop, we will post that AKMSEZ through the chat, so you can copy it from there as well.
Awesome, thank you.
And it looks like your desktop's trying to come up here.
Okay, awesome. So the first thing that I want to point out is, let me see what I have open here. So getting started with Windows Azure, I just want to go that URL where it's going to take you to. I'm going to go ahead and pop that up real quick. Wow, my machine is wicked slow at the moment. And you'll see that you have the first thing you need is you need a Microsoft account or Windows Live ID. And then, it gives you step-by-step on how to do that. And then you're signing up for a free trial. Basically, whenever you get to the bottom, you go into the payment information. For the free trial, it does require a credit card, but you will not be charged. The credit card is basically to make sure that you're of legitimate age to be able to do this and have the capability at some point in the future, if you choose, to switch this over to a pay-as-you-go account. I explained that in pretty good detail here. After you activate your free trial, you can also continue the process of going to the step-by-step hands-on lab to use Windows Azure. And that's really this lab here, a lot of this lab is what we're going to be covering today as we build your first free cloud server and infrastructure step-by-step. So you do have additional instructions there. The one on this particular blog post is a little bit more detailed because that's designed to be done on your own, and we're just not going to have time to cover all of that stuff. However, I include things like deploying Active Directory, et cetera. All right, so let's take a look at Windows Azure. Whenever you log into April, So let me start with on the left hand side. The thing that I want to point out is there's a scroll bar here. You have the blue area on the left, and then just to the right of the blue area, you have a little gray bar here. Now, sometimes this bar is like hidden, so you have to like hover over it before it pops open. So it's not real obvious that there's stuff below it unless you. One of the things that we're going to be doing in the lab is we're going to be going to settings, and then we're going to go to affinity groups and actually create our affinity group. So let me take just a moment to tell you an affinity group basically is just a way to tell Windows Azure, tell your cloud services to group things together so that you want you want your servers to be as close as possible in the data center so that you get the best performance out of them. So that's what your affinity group is. It tells Windows Azure, hey, please keep these things together if you can. And so you have the capability of going to websites. If you can go ahead and create a website, you can go to virtual machines, and you'll see that I have a few virtual machines set up on this particular profile. Just waiting for a refresh on this. You'll see that I have an AD. My Camp AD is my Active Directory controller. My RD is my remote desktop, and then I've got a redundant remote desktop so that I can have more users logged in at one time. And I have incredible scalability by putting multiple machines on Windows Azure. And then, of course, you're not limited. You can go to different flavors of Linux, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And in this case, I have also a Camp AB. Now, for me, that is Azure Backup. AB stands for Azure Backup. So I actually have a server in my Azure account that I use for backup to kind of demonstrate that, and that's what that's for. But we'll talk a bit more about let me just do that here. I can talk just very briefly about Windows Azure Backup. Windows Azure Backup gives you the capability of taking an existing on-prem server and backing it up to Windows Azure. So in a case where you have a file server, you can literally back up that file server to Windows Azure, and then whenever you do a restore, you can restore individual files, or you can restore the entire server. So it's very granular, and it's integrated within the Windows Server Backup on Windows Server 2012. So there's some really, really cool stuff there, and it's not like you have to learn new interfaces or anything like that, because it's all built into Windows Server. Yes, the Windows Server that you're running on your premises. You got mobile services, cloud services, SQL databases, storage, media services, tons of other stuff. Recovery services, for backup and failover of your Hyper-V systems, and Active Directory, different add-ons, lots of different integration. So a couple things that I want to show you is whenever you want to remote control to a machine, you can click on the machine. If you click on this machine name, it's going to drill down, and I'll show you that in a minute. So in this case, I'm just going to click on the status, and then I'll have on the bottom here connect. Now, what's actually going to happen whenever you connect, you'll see this whenever you do it in the lab, but whenever you on it, it's going to pop up a screen to allow you to open an RDP file. And whenever you open the RDP file, you're actually going to be remote controlling into that server. So I'm going to connect. It's going to bring up my security box so that I can authenticate with that server. I log in, and notice what I'm logging into. I'm logging into campad.cloudapp.net. Now, you can have your own URL for this, right? And I expect most people will. I'm going to go ahead and log in just to kind of show you what this process looks like as you're logging in. And again, you're going to be doing this as part of the lab. I just kind of wanted you to see quickly how we're doing that. You will have the step-by-step doing the lab. So you get the authentication box, you get the security box, and then it's going to open up and launch an RDP session. Notice the port 62.8.8.12. That's going to change for each different machine. And now I'm logged into the desktop. I can use this machine just like I can remote control and use any other machine. And you'll see a lot of the services that I have running. I have AD, I have DNS, I have file and storage services. So it's very, very, very easy to be able to use these technologies. Okay. So let me switch back over to, let me switch back over to my other system. I'm just going to minimize the server for now, and we'll get back into the PowerPoint real quick. Now, the next thing that I want to talk about as this system loads up here is I want to give you a, some kind of a perspective on, you know, what is Windows Azure? What, how big is this thing? So as we look at the map, one of the things that you'll see is that it is a really a global offering, and in fact there's data centers located in North America region, east, west, north, south. So there's four different centers in the U.S. There's two data centers located in the European region, northern and western Europe, and there's two data centers located in Asia, eastern and southeastern. Each data center contains between 30 and 100,000 physical hosts. So they're massive. We'll talk. I've got a video that I'm going to show in a couple of minutes. Kind of goes into more detail about this. But there's a content delivery network that can be leveraged to globally cache content across. A huge extra set of locations. There's also some additional data centers being opened up. So the green indicates the content data network that are online and available now. Windows Azure services are available in 89 countries and territories, so this is not just a U.S. thing. And I've got a couple of links here, the IT pack and the EMS data centers, to give you some additional videos. Please don't play those now. I kind of want you to, we're going to make these slides available to you. You'll have these via download. We're going to talk a little bit about the different classes of data centers and some of where these data centers are, just to kind of give you more of a sense of scale and what's going on. One of the things that I don't think is covered in great detail on the video that I'll cover when we get back, but this video, let's go ahead and queue up the video, and then I'll come back and give you a few more things about scale and size.
Where is the Microsoft Cloud? In reality, it exists in our vast worldwide network of data centers that provide the foundation for a wide array of online services. When you use one of these services, for example, to do a search query on Bing, your request travels from your PC or mobile phone across the internet connected by an extensive global fiber optic network through our content delivery network nodes, moving at the speed of light to a data center that executes the query and returns the results, all in a fraction of a second. Microsoft's cloud is comprised of a globally distributed data center infrastructure supporting over 200 online services, more than 1 billion customers, and 20 million businesses in over 70 countries use these services each year. Today, we're going to take you on a tour of a few of our data centers and show you how Microsoft's Global Foundation Services team, the team that designs, builds, operates, and secures our cloud infrastructure, is delivering high availability and reliability, high efficiency, smart scalability, a secure, private, trusted cloud, and sustainability in all our facilities worldwide. Microsoft has been operating data centers since 1989, and this is an area where Microsoft continues to make significant strategic investments. From 1989 to 2004, our data centers were built to address early computer systems that required controlled temperature environments in which to operate. From 2004 to 2007, we began to design our own large facilities to provide our online services with a range of solutions for more rapid deployment and more efficient operations. In 2007, we opened our first Generation 2 data center in Quincy, Washington, which began to change the industry standards for large-scale internet data centers. Today, the facility is approximately the size of 10 football fields and houses tens of thousands of high-performance processing and storage servers in high-density racks that are separated by hot and cool air aisles on a traditional raised floor. Chillers and air handling equipment ensure precise control over environmental conditions. Uninterruptible power supplies, or UPS systems, and vast banks of batteries ensure electricity remains continuous in the event of a short-term power disruption. Emergency generators provide backup power for extended outages and for planned maintenance, and can operate the data center with on-site fuel reserves in the event of a natural disaster. A high-speed, robust fiber optic network connects this data center with other major hubs and internet users. Edge compute nodes host workloads closer to the end users to reduce latency, provide geo-redundancy, and increase overall service resiliency. A team of engineers work around the clock to help ensure services are persistently available to customers. This facility is powered 100% by renewable hydropower. To deliver cloud computing services for global businesses and consumers within a very cost-effective and sustainable operation, we evolved our data center design strategy. Traditional data centers take from 18 to 24 months to build. With our modular approach, we work to reduce costs and deployment time while increasing overall efficiency and sustainability. In 2009, we opened our Chicago data center that spans approximately 10 football fields in size. It is a Generation 3 facility and was our first deployment of modular computing units to dramatically reduce infrastructure costs and the time to deploy large volumes of compute power. We used standard shipping containers to house up to 2,400 servers that were trucked on site and plugged into power, water, and networking infrastructure already in place. This enabled us to scale out capacity to meet customer demands for services within hours versus weeks, and significantly reduced packaging materials, transportation waste, and carbon emissions. Another green IT approach is the use of waterside economization, which enables us to cool the facility without requiring the high levels of electricity typically needed to power large chillers. Power usage effectiveness, or PUE, is the measure of total data center power consumption divided by IT or critical power, and highlights how much power is consumed by supporting infrastructure versus the power to operate servers. A typical industry data center has a PUE of approximately 2.0, where the amount of energy consumed for the facilities and supporting infrastructure equals the energy to power the servers. This award-winning data center has a PUE from 1.15 to 1.22 for the containers in the facility. Also in 2009, we further developed the containment approach to deliver additional efficiencies in our Dublin Generation 3 facility. This facility spans approximately 7 football fields in size and deploys large-scale compute capacity contained in pods of servers cooled by airside economization. Air handling units on the roof draw in cold outside air to provide the cooling for the servers and facility. Evaporative coolers, vaporizing water into the air to absorb heat, and an air bypassing feature improves operational efficiency and maintains constant room temperature, regardless of outdoor conditions. The facility uses less than 1% of the annual water consumption of a traditional data center. Our Dublin facility maintains a PUE of 1.25 and improves energy efficiency by approximately 50% as compared to our traditional data centers of similar capacity. In 2010, we began to build our first Generation 4 data center design, building on the Dublin experience of using airside economization into a truly modular design. This technologically advanced facility challenged every industry design standard to significantly reduce water and power use, and it uniquely demonstrates how we have evolved our approach. Our Generation 4 facility utilizes air-cooled, IT pre-manufactured components, or IT packs. These state-of-the-art pre-assembled plug-and-play modular components can be manufactured in many locations through a dynamic supply chain of globally distributed vendors and use recyclable materials such as steel and aluminum, which are then shipped on-site and assembled. IT packs allow rapid commissioning of additional compute capacity as the business needs it, reducing the typical 2-year construction time frame in half and reducing capital costs by 30 to 50% over the lifetime of the facility. The IT packs also provide self-contained UPS, along with air handling and evaporative cooling systems to control ambient temperatures, with 4 cooling modes to ensure the inlet temperature is maintained between 50 and 90 degrees Fahrenheit and 20 to 80% relative humidity. Our simple recyclable metal building provides shelter from weather and directs proper airflow through all systems. This approach enables us to deliver PUEs of 1.15 to 1.2 across the facility, and energy is provided from 100% renewable hydropower. Operational excellence and services reliability comprise our highest priorities. Microsoft ensures high availability through advanced monitoring and incident response, service support, and backup failover capability managed through our geographically distributed Microsoft Operations Centers, operating 24/7/365. We also deploy one of the largest implementations of Microsoft System Center in the world, and we use our own data center repository called Scry to record power consumption and allow precise cost allocation to our internal business groups. In addition, our network is one of the largest in the world, with a fiber optic and content distribution network backbone connecting our data centers and edge nodes to ensure high performance and reliability. A large geographically distributed footprint of data centers enables us to be close to customers to reduce network latency and allow for geo-redundant backup and failover. Security at our data centers employs outer and inner perimeters with increasing security at each level, utilizing a combination of technology and traditional physical measures. Technical elements include two-factor access control, badge readers, extensive camera monitoring, and integrated alarm systems. Traditional measures can include perimeter fencing, security officers, and locked server racks. Data secured in Microsoft's data centers is classified based on its value and protected accordingly. For example, hard drives with highly sensitive information are routinely destroyed when they are decommissioned. We also limit access to our facilities and servers to only those individuals who have valid business needs. In addition to maintaining best-in-class operations processes, we routinely bring in third parties to verify our capabilities, resulting in ISO and PCI certifications, SAS 70 Type 2 attestations, and FISMA certification and accreditation. Microsoft's award-winning cloud infrastructure powers the cloud services our customers and partners use every day. So the next time you search on Bing, expand your customer services with Windows Azure, communicate with employees via Office 365, email your family on Hotmail, or challenge your friends across the world on Xbox Live, you too are tapping into the power of the Microsoft cloud.
Hi, me again. A couple of the things I wanted to mention about the data centers. I presume you guys are at least a little bit impressed by now. But one of the key things that I think is important to note is just the growth of Windows Azure and Windows Azure adoption. We're currently seeing approximately 1,000 customers onboarding to Windows Azure every day. So not only do we have an incredible infrastructure and a broad service offering, you know, way more broad than anybody else can even dream about right now, but it's getting incredible adoption in terms of just raw numbers. So let's talk a little bit about why and what are some of the ways that this you know, cloud services is being used, or the best, you know, scenarios in which to use them. So anytime you have resources where you have periods of inactivity, that's an awesome workload for something like Windows Azure, because you're only paying for what you use. So in those periods of inactivity, you can literally bring those services down and they don't cost you anything. So you don't have to worry about over-provisioning capacity, you know, wasted capacity, you know, or time to market. You know, spinning up a infrastructure in Windows Azure takes literally minutes, and you'll see that as you do it yourself in a little bit. Literally, you know, I mean, I remember back months ago, years ago even, you know, to provision a new server was to, you know, submit a rec, get it approved, go through, you know, 2 weeks of getting it approved, another month to 6 weeks for getting it delivered, and then a couple of more weeks to get it racked and stacked, and maybe in that same time I can get an operating system on it, maybe not, but as a business unit, it would take me many months to get a new server. And, you know, virtualization kind of changed that, where we could do that a lot faster. You know, that what was months, you know, with virtualization, we were able to often get down to weeks. But with with technologies like Windows Azure, with virtualization, you have the, eventually you run out of capacity. Eventually you do have to take that 3-month process of provisioning new hardware. And with cloud services, you don't have that. So, if you need to go to market quickly, and you need to, or you need to grow quickly, leveraging Windows Azure, leveraging cloud services can really go a long way to getting you where you need to be quickly. Because literally you can spin up, you know, 30, 40, 50 machines in an hour, right? It just does not take very long. And you can even do it with, you know, a couple of simple steps, leveraging some tools you're going to learn about in a little bit, in particular PowerShell. So we've got some incredible stuff coming. Another scenario.
Hey, Dan, mind if I jump in for a sec?
Sure, please.
Just, I think this is hugely important because, you know, we can scale up on these servers at a moment's notice. And if you think about how, you know, yeah, certainly you can spin up VMs quickly, but as Dan said, that hardware isn't there. And at some point, you're going to hit that level. And I'm always reminded of the story back with Toys R Us. I think it was 2006, this time of year when they started to really pushed to sell toys at Christmas time online. And they drove millions of people to their website. And it brought down their website, basically a denial of service, because too many people, too many customers hit their website at the same time. And they were down for over a week as they scrambled to get more servers and try to get that up and available. It cost them millions. And the fact is, if you have cloud services, you just turn that dial, right? You just make some config changes and spin up more servers to front end that load. There's just no other way to be able to not have to capacity plan and not have to worry about getting it wrong. So I think this is just a great piece of the public cloud.
Yeah, no question. Just to think about it from a workload standpoint, on-demand dev test lab environments. Perfect scenario for, you know, for cloud services. And then, you know, we talked earlier when we talked a little bit about backup, and cold VMs for disaster recovery. Another perfect scenario for, leveraging cloud resources. And then, also batch job workloads. From a, you know, growth standpoint, like, you know, the scenario that Brian gave us, you can't get there from here without some heavy duty, robust infrastructure behind you, the kind of infrastructure that Windows Azure allows us to do. What about, you know, backups, and how much data are you guys adding? I mean, you know, we're seeing stories like, you know, the amount of data that's being added to our networks is growing exponentially, and being able to, you know, provision those disks, being able to get that hardware in-house to be able to handle that load, and then of course, yeah, you've got the backups of all that massive amount of data as well. So you can integrate your backup solution with Windows Azure to not only provide the capability for that fast growing and that exponential growth, but also almost in storage capabilities. If you have unpredictable demand, so unplanned peak times, like, you know, the holidays are coming up, and, you know, if you're in retail, you kind of know that it's going to be a really, really busy time. But what if you know, there's a new product that comes out, and it, you know, and it becomes the, you know, the hot thing that everybody has to have. And all of a sudden, you know, you're one of the few people that carry it, because a lot of other companies didn't decide to carry it. And it becomes the next hot thing, you know, it becomes, something that everybody's got to have. And you have the ability, if you're running your platform already, you know, if you're running your systems on a platform that has that ability to scale on, you know, in an unpredictable environment such as that, you simply, like Brian said, turn a knob and you're up and running. Also predictable burst. From a predictable burst standpoint, that is, you know, I know from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 4 o'clock in the afternoon every day, four or five days a week, I'm going to need five times the capacity that I need for the rest of the day. Well, if you have that kind of predictable bursting that you know you have, cloud services and Windows Azure is a perfect scenario for you as well, because you can spin things up for that 4 hours and spin them down for the rest of the day, and you only get charged for that 4 hours that you're using all those extra services. You can also think in terms of not only in a single day, but in a course of time. So as we're approaching the holidays now, and you've got all these companies that need just massive capabilities for a 1-3 month period, you know, what they had to do in the past and what they had to do in the virtualization world is they had to go buy a bunch of hardware and have it staged and ready to go for the holiday season. Also, a whole different world now, because now when we introduce cloud computing, you have the capability of very easily scaling way beyond what you could do in a virtualization platform. And oh, by the way, the other 9 months of the year, you don't have to pay for any of that stuff. Not only that, but from a CapEx standpoint, major changes. I mean, Windows Azure, you're basically utilizing operational expenditure dollars instead of having to have huge upfront capital expenditures. And for a lot of companies, that's very, very, very appealing. So specifically for line of business applications or seasonal applications like the holidays are now, but also for high performance computing, you know, you want to spin up a project. You want to do a proof of concept, perfect example, where you want to do some high performance stuff. You know, why go out and buy all that hardware when you can do that? Well, you can spin all that stuff up in a matter of hours in Windows Azure. And again, you're only paying for what you need. And then, of course, once you get it there, you can always take it back down to, if you do want to ultimately host it in-house yourself, once you've gone through that scenario, you can certainly do that. It's just, you know, it's VHD files, so you can run those in Hyper-V. And the reverse is also true. If you've got something running on-prem, you can send that up to Windows Azure as well. Let's talk about performance, and specifically performance price performance index. There was an independent study done by the Cloud Spectator in June of this year, and what they found was from a comparative standpoint, the price performance of infrastructure as a service was 3 to 5 times better than everybody else. I mean, just totally dominated the charts, whether it would be, you know, against Amazon EC2 or HP Cloud or Rackspace or even SoftLayer. I mean, Azure just kind of blew them away. And you know, this is not a point in time where we knew what was going on. This was over over an entire week where there was constant evaluations of these systems and doing comparatively. So from a price and performance standpoint, Azure just can't be beat. So let's take a look at what it actually costs. What does Windows Azure cost? And I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. And there's a calculator at windowsazure.com. And then you can click on the calculator there. So I'm going to switch over and kind of show you around very quickly on this. Okay. So I'm going to go to... And I'm going to go ahead and click OK to get rid of that box. So from the Windows Azure screen, if you drop the menu down, there's a menu right here. If you're logged into the portal, there's a hide menu or unhide menu. Then you can click on pricing to get to the calculator if you don't want to go directly to the URL. First thing I'll point out is the websites are free. For the first 10 websites, it's free. There are a couple of limitations in terms of for the free sites, in terms of the amount of connections you can have to it, the amount of storage, etc. But absolutely free. Another thing that's free that I want to point out is we talked about backup earlier, and I don't actually have a part of the presentation, but backing up to Windows Azure for the first, I think it's the first 5 gigabytes is free. So you can back up a machine. If it's less than 5 gigabytes, you can do it absolutely free. You don't have to back up the whole machine. You can do just the data if you want to do that. So, but beyond that, the costs are very reasonable. You can do a price calculation for websites or virtual machines. I'm gonna just click on virtual machines for now. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and go to the full calculator to kind of show you everything. So from here, you can see the websites. Basically, you can just spin these different things up that you want. How much bandwidth are you going to need? Spin that up to whatever you think you're going to need for the workload that you're putting on it. How many virtual machines do you want? What size are they? Brian's going to talk more about these later. But let's just go ahead and put a extra small machine up. It's going to cost $14.88 a month, or about 2 cents an hour. Don't know how they do it for that, but they do. If you wanted to add SQL Server, you could do that. If you want to add BizTalk, mobile services, cache services, storage. We'll talk more about storage later, geo-redundant storage or local redundant. But let's say that I want to do, I certainly don't need 7 terabytes. But let's go with a terabyte and a half, roughly of storage. Actually, that seems kind of big to me, even for a small server. Let's go for 700 gigabytes, you can do bandwidth. How much bandwidth are you going to need? Now, remember, uploading to Windows Azure doesn't cost anything. So these are your download numbers. All right. And then a Hyper-V Recovery Manager, you know, we're not going to go into a lot of detail about all of this stuff. But if you go down to the bottom, we'll see that the price of this system, as I've specced it out, is $70 a month. That's on a pay-as-you-go. There's also a 6-month payment plan or a 12-month payment plan. You can also do a prepay to get even a steeper discount. And if you go to the bottom of the calculator, there's some links here to kind of tell you where to go to for additional information on the pricing. From a sheer storage standpoint, you just can't beat it. I mean, if you think about, let's just go back to the storage for just a second. Let's say I'm going to go with 2.5 terabytes of storage. It's $175 for 2.5 terabytes of storage. I don't know if you guys have, you know, purchased storage for, think about what this is. This is, you know, every time you store data, it's getting stored redundantly 3 times. Within that, you know, so you're talking about the equivalent of SAN type of storage, where you got fast storage and it's redundant all the way through. Every aspect of it is redundant, and it's only $175 for 2.5 terabytes. See how much it's going to cost you to put that same 2.5 terabytes into a SAN environment. You know, it's just incredible. I don't know how Microsoft does it for these prices, but they do.
Yeah, that's at 7 cents per gigabyte for local storage, locally redundant storage. And if you go geographical redundant storage, it's 9.5 cents per gigabyte. And that's before you start to get large size volume discounts addition to that. Actually, if you click on that storage geo-redundant link there, it'll bring up the table that shows that list of storage costs.
And Brian, are you going to talk a little bit later about the difference between geo and local?
I will. I'll cover that.
All right, so I'll skip over that for now. I would strongly encourage you to go take a look at the pricing because, hey, you know what? This is a strength of Windows, a huge strength of Windows Azure.
One of the things I always look at when I look at storage is, what is it? You know, how long does a disk last? And granted, it was a Wikipedia article, but after I lost some of my home server disk, I went and looked, and it's 7 years is the planned lifespan of a disk on average. So I thought, well, that's okay. I had it backed up to a recordable CD, and the average lifespan of that is 4 years. And I realized, well, my family photos and all those things, I came close to losing them. And so now I actually have them backed up locally at my house to my server, and that backs it up to Azure Storage really inexpensively.
Awesome. And those disks are constantly getting, you know, they're constantly making sure that hardware is good because, you know, it's redundant in terms of RAID, but it's also redundant in terms of servers themselves. So you're just not going to have to worry about, you know, losing storage like we do at home and in the office. So just a quick recap, you know, we talked about Windows Azure. In fact, all of the different cloud aspects of Windows Azure, infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and software as a service. Self-service provisioning, where you go out and you create via a self-service portal the websites, the virtual machines, the stuff that you want to do. We talked about massive global scale, right? And the data centers, the size of the data centers, and how you can leverage the massive investment that Microsoft has made in their data centers around the world. We showed you how to go in and estimate costs for what you might want to be putting into the cloud. And we talked about cloud patterns and common scenarios of, you know, how and why you might want to use Windows Azure. So the next thing that we're going to do is we're going to jump into Windows Azure Storage and Virtual Networks. Actually, we don't have that right. We're going to do the other one, right? We're going to do the Windows Azure Virtual.
Right. We're going to look at virtuals first.
Go ahead.
And hopefully address one of the customer's concerns. Steve had mentioned that this is a really long commercial. And really, Steve, what we're trying to do is give the base understanding of the data centers and how these things work. And I know we gave pricing there, but we won't be going through the pricing calculator again. So we don't, as you might normally in a sales presentation, get the pricing at the end. We'll continually get more and more technical as we go. So we'll start in the virtual machines now and give you an idea of what we can do with the infrastructure as a service piece. Then we're going to move on into building the network and the storage that you really are going to do in the lab before you build a virtual machine. But I wanted to show you the virtual machines first. And then when we actually do the lab, it's going to be hands-on. You're going to build up a network, and you're going to build up the environment, a virtual machine, download a VHD or bringing that up into the Azure environment, place it into Azure, and then make it as an image. So we'll be getting much more technical as we progress throughout this event.